Welcome to American Mosaic in VOA Special English. I'm Doug Johnson. On our show this week, we answer questions about American Indians, play some music by the group The Decemberists, and report about Veterans Day. Saturday, November 11th, is Veterans Day in the United States. It is a day to honor Americans who have served in the country's military forces. Barbara Klein has more.
Many cities and towns across the United States hold ceremonies honoring the nation's veterans. Probably the most ceremonies are held in Washington, D.C. Several memorials honor the men and women who fought and died in the service of their country. The National Veterans Day ceremony takes place at Arlington National Cemetery near Washington. This is where veterans from all the nation's wars are buried. Each year on Veterans Day, the president and other top officials lay a wreath of flowers at the Tomb of the Unknowns. They also attend a memorial service to honor those who were killed. Another ceremony is held at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington. Speakers and military bands honor those killed during the Vietnam War. Their names appear on the memorial itself. The speakers and Vietnam War veterans lay a wreath of flowers following the ceremony. Navy officials lay a wreath at the Lone Sailor statue at the United States Navy Memorial. Similar ceremonies are held at the Korean War Veterans Memorial, the World War II Memorial, and the Women in Military Service for America Memorial. Air Force officials are holding Veterans Day ceremonies at the new Air Force Memorial in Virginia on Friday. The United States Marine Corps also celebrates November 10th every year because it is the Marine Corps' birthday. This year, the Marine Corps is celebrating the opening of the National Museum of the Marine Corps near the Quantico Marine Corps base in Virginia. Government and Marine Corps officials are taking part in those opening ceremonies Friday. A Veterans Day memorial ceremony will be held Saturday to honor Marines no longer living. The museum will open to the public on Monday. Officials say the museum will make it possible for visitors to experience what it means to be a United States Marine.
November is National American Indian and Alaska Native Heritage Month in the United States. It honors the history, culture, and traditions of American Indians and Alaska Native people. So, this week, we answer two listener questions about American Indians. Godswill Ike Kalu from Nigeria asks why Native Americans are called Indians. And Amrit Rai from Nepal asks about the economic situation of American Indians today. The European explorer Christopher Columbus gave the name Indians to the native peoples of North and South America. He thought that he had reached a place called the Indies. In time, the terms American Indian and Indian became widely used. The United States Bureau of Indian Affairs says the term Native American started to be used in the 1960s.
There they will begin a series of communications tests with launch control at Cape Kennedy and
Alaska Natives. Later, the term also included Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders. The government agency says the Eskimos and Aleuts of Alaska do not like to be called Indians. They call themselves Alaska Natives. Many American Indians reject the term Native American. They say it tries to describe too many different groups of people, including
slowly and loudly. The American space shuttle Atlantis will lift off launch pad 39B for its.
These people want to be called American. Tribe, such as Lakota or Navajo.
Our studio engineer was Keith Holmes. This is Shirley Griffith.
And this is Steve Ember. Join us again.
4 million American Indians and Alaska Natives. Some live on government land called reservation.
Remember, internet users can get schedules, scripts of features, and the special English.
Cities and towns. The economic situation. A continuing study by Harvard University
report. Scientists have long debated what caused many kinds of large animals
generally earn less money than other Americans.
Ancient humans for the disappearance. They say human hunters on both continents made
higher rates of death and disease, and
13,000 years ago, North America was home to many large mammals.
However, the study is also finding that
these and many other animals died out soon after. More than 70% of the continent's large mammals were affected. John Alroy of the University of California at Santa Barbara led one of the studies. He developed a computer program to study the effect of human hunters on 41 kinds of large mammals. Mr. Alroy based his study on evidence that humans first arrived in North America about 13,000 years ago. He examined how a group of about 100 humans could grow in number over a period of 1,200 years. Mr. Alroy estimated such things as reproduction rates and the amount of food humans need to survive. He found that it was possible for the small group of humans to expand to about 300,000 members during the period. Mr. Alroy said ancient humans could have killed off many kinds of large animals native to North America. He said the animals that disappeared had low rates of reproduction. This would have prevented them from recovering from the attacks by humans. Science magazine also reported the findings of a study by Australian, French, and American scientists. They studied fossil remains from 28 areas across Australia and Papua New Guinea. The scientists said the fossils show that large animals in the area disappeared about 46,000 years ago. That is a few thousand years after humans arrived. More than 30 years ago, Paul Martin of the University linked with human expansion. He says the two studies support his position. Mr. Martin adds that local climate may have influenced the disappearance of some animals. This BOA Special English Science Report was written by George Grow. This is Bill White.
The Making of a Nation, a program in special English by The Voice of America. In September 1901, President William McKinley was assassinated. His vice president, Theodore Roosevelt, succeeded him. This is Shep O'Neill. Today, Maurice Joyce and I tell the story of Roosevelt and his administration.
Theodore Roosevelt became president at the beginning of the 20th century. It was a time of rapid changes in American society. The changes were a result of technology. Great progress had been made, for example, in transportation. Almost every American city had a street railroad or trolley. These systems were powered by electricity. Thousands of Americans owned automobiles, and Henry Ford was planning a low-cost version which even more people could buy. Great progress had been made in communications. There were telephones in almost every business office in the cities and in many homes. And Italian inventor Guglielmo Marconi had sent the first wireless message across the Atlantic Ocean.
It was clear that the United States had made great progress in technology. Yet many believed it had made little progress in social issues. These people felt America's natural resources were being misused. They felt America's farmers were poorer than they should be. They felt America's industries were unfair to workers. Since the late 1800s, a spirit of reform had been growing in the United States. It started among farmers and led to the creation of a new political party, the Populists. Then organized labor joined the movement. Then middle-class Americans. Not everyone agreed on ways to solve society's problems, but they were united in the belief that social progress had to be made. The future of American democracy, they said, depended on the success of the progressive movement. The man who came to represent the spirit of reform most of all was the new president, Theodore Roosevelt.
Roosevelt was born to a wealthy family in New York City in 1858. He was a weak child with poor eyesight. He spent much of his time reading. When Theodore was 13 years old, he got into an argument with two other boys. He tried to fight them, but he was not strong enough. That incident was a turning point in Roosevelt's life. He decided to overcome his physical weaknesses through exercise and hard work. He lifted weights, ran long distances, and learned how to be a boxer. He continued these activities while he attended Harvard University. After college, Roosevelt married Alice Lee and returned to New York. He became active in the Republican Party. When he was just 23 years old, he was elected to the state legislature. Roosevelt quickly became known as a reform politician. He denounced all forms of dishonesty in government.
Roosevelt's first political career did not last long. He withdrew after 4 years, following the deaths of his wife and mother. His sadness was so great that he could not continue. Roosevelt moved to a ranch in the Dakota Territory of the American West. He began to raise beef cattle. At first, the local cowboys laughed at him. They called him Four Eyes because he wore eyeglasses. They stopped laughing when they found he could do the hard work of a cowboy as well as any of them.
Roosevelt spent 2 years in the West. Then he returned to New York and a life in politics. He became the Republican candidate for mayor of New York City, but lost the election. Then he campaigned for Republican Benjamin Harrison in the presidential election of 1888. Harrison won, and he named Roosevelt head of the Federal Civil Service Commission. Roosevelt fought hard to keep politics out of the civil service. Democrat Grover Cleveland was elected president 4 years later. He approved of Roosevelt's civil service reforms. He asked him to remain in the job. Roosevelt did so for another 2 years. Then he became commissioner of police in New York City. Once again, he pushed for reforms. He removed policemen found guilty of receiving illegal payments.
In 1897, President William McKinley named Theodore Roosevelt Assistant Secretary of the Navy. The United States went to war against Spain a year later. Roosevelt wanted an active part in the war, so he resigned and joined the army. He organized a force of horse soldiers known as the Rough Riders. They were honored for bravery in the Battle of San Juan Hill in Cuba. Roosevelt was now a war hero. Republican Party leaders in New York thought he would be the perfect candidate for governor. Teddy, as the public called him, won a close election. He soon made clear he would not take orders from party leaders. The new governor proposed controls on businesses. His main targets were companies that supplied the public with water, electricity, and natural gas. He demanded changes in the food and drug industries, and he shortened the workday for women and children.
The public praised Roosevelt's reform efforts. Local party leaders did not. As one said, "I do not want him raising hell in my state any longer." Local leaders decided the best way to get him out of New York politics was to support him for Vice President of the United States. The office gave a man very little voice or power in politics. Roosevelt did not want the job for that reason. By then, he wanted just one thing, to be president of the United States. He was sure being vice president would ruin his chances. But he accepted the nomination at the National Convention. He would run on the ticket with William McKinley. Sadly, he said, I do not expect to go any further in politics. Several months after he was sworn in as vice president, he was sworn in as president. William McKinley was dead. Theodore Roosevelt became president as the result of an assassin's bullet.
Roosevelt promised party leaders that he would continue McKinley's policies. He said he would move slowly in making any changes. In his first message to Congress, President Roosevelt offered a few new proposals. He asked for a Department of Commerce and Labor to deal with industrial problems. He called for a stronger navy and for limits on immigration. And he proposed building a canal in Central America to link the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans.
Businessmen who feared the worst when Roosevelt became president began to breathe easier. It seemed he was not going to push for reforms after all. But Roosevelt was only following an old hunting rule of African tribesmen. Speak softly, the rule said, and carry a big stick. Roosevelt spoke softly during his first months as president. He would use the big stick later. When the blow came, it was against big business. A group of wealthy railroad owners had agreed to join their railroads into one. They formed a company to control it. The new company would have complete control of railroad transportation in the American West. There would be no competition.
President Roosevelt believed the company violated the Sherman antitrust law. The law said it was illegal for businesses to interfere with trade among the states. The law also said it was illegal for any person or group to get control of a whole industry. Since the antitrust law had been passed in 1890, few companies had been found guilty of violating it. So many people were shocked when Roosevelt announced he was taking action under the law against the railroad trust. He said there could be no compromise in how the law was enforced. That will be our story next week.
You have been listening to The Making of a Nation, a program in special English by the Voice of America. Your narrator,